Today we're talking hot dogs, Corvettes, and Frankenstein's bulimic daughter. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
That music is the Silicon Valley theme, because this is the Silicon Valley After Show here on AfterBuzz TV, guys. My name is Jeff Graham. Thank you so much for... Oh, and there's the credits.
And we mix it up.
And we mix it
we
up.
Gotta do a
DJ
remix.
Marissa S. in the booth.
Remix.
This is On My Own by...
Yeah.
Shout me out, Marissa. Who are we listening to? What artist?
This is... Oh,
Old Man Saxon featuring Mount Sinai.
They do some deep cuts on the Silicon Valley
sure they
soundtrack.
Do.
It's one of my favorite things about the show. Of course, the show is Silicon Valley, guys. We're talking about it here on the After Show. My name is Jeff Graham. If you guys want to find me online, you can do so at Jeffrey C. Graham. We have a new panelist today who I'd love to introduce first. This is Brant Pitvinick.
Yes.
Brant, where can the people find you online if they'd like to
I'm
find you?
I'm at Brant Pitvinick, or you can go to whyimnot.com.
Yes.
And get everything connected.
We're excited to have you. Brant's a big unscripted producer, so you definitely know TV. So
I know TV.
Yes, absolutely.
I know how little I know in TV. Yes. That's the more accurate phrase.
And of course, we have Nate.
Back again. You can find me on social media at DogLikeNate, and I'm excited to be here.
And I'm Christian Blatt. I'm not a hot dog, and you can find me at ChristianDMZ.
Oh, man, not a hot dog. So much fun. I loved this episode, personally. I'm interested to hear what you guys thought of episode 4 of season 4 of Silicon Valley before we dive into coverage.
Well, let's be polite and start with our guests.
Yes, what did you think of this episode?
I thought this actually was the first cohesive episode they've done this year. I think the first three episodes were getting to a place where they could have fun with the characters and not have to use their plot armor to like just move the story around where they could actually start going forward. So I actually really enjoyed it. I laughed out loud a couple times, so that was good.
Great. What about you? What about you?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, the one thing I realized, especially that one scene where they're all, when Richard just comes back and they're all like, you know, talking about their day and stuff, you really get a sense of like how they can interact with each other and their chemistry. And also, especially with Jin Yang this episode, so much of these characters from the beginning have just been like their types, which fits the role comedically, and it's great. But now they're almost becoming like people, and they're doing things that are funny, not just because of their, you know, comedic trope, but because of the situation and just the dialogue, and it's really fun to watch.
That's a good point.
I thought this was a great episode because it was a great Jin Yang episode. We got to see some more from our friend Big Head, and the only thing missing, Russ Henneman, my favorite character. But other than that, I think it had everything this episode.
Yeah, I thought this was a great episode too. It kind of had that feeling of we're settling in. I feel like in the middle of season, in the middle of Silicon Valley seasons, there's kind of those episodes where nothing new is necessarily introduced or nothing huge, but we just kind of are moving along. And I think, like you said, Brant, really mining the comedy of the characters.
Yeah.
We can focus on that more.
Well, I think also what they've done well is they've got a little bit of the Seinfeld-esque character that they've layered over that, where the plot lines of the individual episodes take a back seat to the understanding that the audience, you know of the characters and you want to see the interaction. And that's a lot of potential moving forward of what the show can become when you have that much connection to the characters and how they interact.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point because Dinesh didn't have that much to do in this episode, but the whole time he's paranoid about his girlfriend spying on him, and he's like, she'd never do that. But if you're watching, I love you, me.
Right.
So I thought that was great. That was some great work for Dinesh.
Yeah, the whole subplot it's going to go somewhere fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. I liked the Wi-Fi wifey word in the middle of. That was really funny. Really, this was a traditional A-plot, B-plot episode, which I feel like up until now we've had like A-plot, B-plot, C-plot. It's been pretty busy.
Any plot. Let's figure it out. Yeah. We need a new plot.
It's
what do we do?
It's been very busy, so it was kind of nice to slow down a bit. And I think I want to start by talking about, to me, the A-plot, which was Jin Yang's seafood app. We really got to dive into the complex dynamics of what he's developed.
Have you guys already Googled to see if there is a Shazam for food?
I did want to see if there was one, and
it feels like there should be.
There should be, and I feel like there will be one now. I don't know if you believe.
There's one, but if you look it up, all it can do is identify pasta and not pasta. So that's
that's more useful than hot dog. Not
that's true.
So
they did that thing on Bill Nye where the guy who's blind built that camera phone that can like look at things and tell you what it is.
Oh, that's
so there's
cool.
Precedent there.
Nice.
We just have to get
I just need to
just got
to
get the research.
I want to know if it's all beef. I want to know if it's kosher. Like that's all I need.
This was such a funny way. I mean, we knew that the app wasn't going to work because, like, it wouldn't be the show if the app worked.
Right.
But I thought this was such a funny way because technically the app did work. What did you guys think of this development of the hot dog, not hot dog, Shazam food app? What were your reactions?
I mean, I thought that I thought it was very funny, and of course, the fact that Ehrlich not being able to resist the urge to take a picture of his own hot dog, of course, ends up, you know, getting Jin Yang most of $4 million. So, you know, he should really be thanking him. Yeah. But like I said, it was great for Jin Yang because of the fact that this guy who he barely tolerates and just insults him all the time, you know, he just kind of got an upper hand on him very clearly.
But
on this one,
what was really interesting is they haven't done that a lot in these shows, and I find that HBO shows don't do this sort of classic throwback comedy callback. Right, it was a long play for that joke.
They
tossed it out in the beginning when he did the no hot dog thing. That joke played on its own, and you thought that was it, that Jin Yang just didn't understand, and so you thought that was the end of it. And so to call back to it and have the whole episode sort of circle around is classic comedy writing. And you don't see that a lot in these types of shows, particularly on HBO, because they want to be so clever and new and nuanced.
Yeah.
Because, hey, we're on HBO, that usually they leave some of these. This is like comedy gold, and it works. It's that classic style. And like when it started to come back around with the hot dog thing, you're like, oh my god, that's what made that so great.
It was a great turn. Did any of you guys catch the other callback in this episode? There was a very brief one.
I don't know if I did.
There was the Tavs versus the Seven Spaces callback. Did
you
notice
that? Murray said, I won't hire him because he uses Tavs. And he said it so like offhandedly.
Yeah. I really appreciate it. Yeah, I think the great thing about callbacks in a show like this is it really rewards loyal viewers, and it's a nice wink, definitely, to fans.
The best thing about this show, the best thing about comedy overall is timing. Mm-hmm. It's all about timing.
Right.
And this show's timing is just impeccable.
Yeah.
And the callback is just like a perfect...
Yeah,
like
they did a good job of it.
Just the way they pull it off.
By the way,
fantastic.
How could you possibly hire someone who does spaces instead of Tabs? Obviously, you need the Tabs. So I'm with Richard.
I want to go back to Jin Yang really quick, and just the way that he presents it initially and he's so proud. He's like, I did it. I really did it. And then she asks him, she's like, so that's it? It just says no and no hot dogs? No and no hot dog. Like, it's
not
both.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you're missing half of the point.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's also not hot dog.
Well,
this was pretty brilliant. This was a nice way to tie in Jin Yang's subplot with Nelson Baghetti teaching at Stanford. Did you guys see... Well, first of all, let's talk about Big Head's curriculum. Of course, we kind of wondered. We talked about this last week.
We had Big Head in the studio.
If you haven't seen it, we had Josh Brenner in the studio, who plays Big Head on the show. But, of course, as a teacher, classic teacher move, he only shows movies. He shows both Tron and then maybe the new Tron.
He didn't realize there was another Tron. Right. So he that
thought I could get him another week.
Yeah, exactly. Good.
I thought they go, did you both Trons? He goes, no, Tron.
Tron. Yeah. And as we saw in the episode, he was showing You've Got Mail. So,
such a stretch.
Well, yeah. Importantly, he also showed them The Social Network.
Yes. Right. Which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
There's technology inside your phone, so you're doing double work.
Double learning, I think is what he's...
Double learning.
Yeah.
So funny. I can never get enough of Big Head. But this was great, and of course, they work in Ehrlich as Big Head's TA of sorts to try to get the students to find and research food photos for this image recognition software. Did you guys think for a minute that the students would actually do the task that was assigned for them?
I mean, I thought they would do it, but
I did too. I actually thought they were going to have a little bit like he's going to get in trouble or he's going to get caught doing that. They're going to have some sort of disaster that way. So
yeah, I thought there might be some hiccup or something, but I didn't think it was going to work.
The thing I loved about this was the reason none of the kids did it was because they didn't like the way he talked to Professor Baghetti.
If anybody else came in and like subtly assigned it as a like you know a work to do, like it may have happened, but because of Ehrlich's attitude,
it would have been the easy route to be like, we realized we were being exploited and we didn't want to do the
right,
work.
Yeah.
We didn't like the way you talked to Professor Baghetti.
But what I loved about Big Head's reaction is he's just like, oh, you guys did that? Oh, that's
so
great. He's so happy for them. Like, he's so just invested in other people's happiness. He doesn't care.
I'm a successful professor now.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And when they shouted out, they're like, well, we actually learned that from The Social Network. He's like... For those who are listening, he nodded in approval, which I thought was a very funny joke.
That was good.
But then, of course, Coleman is in the class, and he's the reason that they weren't doing any of this digging. Even more so, now Coleman is actually kind of mining the class to develop their own Shazam for Food app. I did not see this twist coming at all either. This was great. Really funny, I thought. Absolutely.
No, but I'm not surprised he went to Stanford because he always seemed like kind of a jerk off.
Kind of a Stanford
dude.
It's funny because it was a bit of a throwaway, but you're like, okay, well, why are they doing that? And it's like, oh, because we need to pay the hot dog joke off.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just all dovetailed together.
It was so great. I agree. This was a really smart way to call back to the hot dog joke. And we did get a Lori Bream appearance. She's one of my favorite performances on the show. I'm trying to book Suzanne Cryer. But so much fun to see Lori. I loved the moment when Lori calls it penile recognition software.
Yes. Right.
And then, of course, Monica's like, oh, you mean dick pics? And she goes, Monica. She's like, so offended. But in the most Silicon Valley twist ever, Jin Yang pitches the hot dog recognition software as a dick pic filtering software and sells it to Periscope.
Because he had a job interview at Periscope, yes. And then he starts talking about this, and then he leaves with $4 million.
How did you guys feel about Jin Yang actually getting his payday here?
I figured it was inevitable. It was coming. It was you knew it was going to happen, where he was going to probably do better than anyone else.
All right, so here's the big question on the Jin Yang storylines. All of these episodes have been written and shot. Mm-hmm. They're done. So the writers and all the people don't know how much we're all enjoying the Jin Yang of it all. They were guessing when they were writing it. They were hoping. Now, did they plan to pay that off in a big way for the season, or were they moving on somewhere else? So this will be really interesting going forward. So does he become a main character that comes in and drives through a bunch more storylines with him, or is he out? Is this the last we'll see of Jin Yang? And the writers right now are like, uh-oh, what just happened? Yeah. Because everybody's loving it. Because that's what happens when you write. You're a writer's guys in a room making each other laugh, hoping for the best, and you don't know what people are going to pick up on. Mm-hmm.
You get the feeling that they like Jin Yang, though, so I would be surprised if we didn't see him again, but I feel like we won't see as much of him as we did in this episode.
I would say the same thing, is that they've shown repeatedly throughout the show that even though they easily could have written him off at the beginning, I think they look for opportunities of like, all right, we can put him here, and it'll fit, and it'll be rewarding.
I just wonder if that's an Ehrlich device.
In terms of
that gives him something to play off of, and that imagine being in the writer's room saying like, we're using the same joke over and over again. It's a little racial stereotyping. Right. It's a little bit like, by the way, funny as hell.
Yeah,
but I could just see without the interaction with the audience. Uh-huh. Going, oh man, like I wonder if people are going to feel this is a little stale, like we're playing the same joke, the language barrier, the funny, like, no, maybe they nailed it and he's going to come back in a bigger, better way and we'll all be in love with that. But we could be like, oh man, remember when they almost had Jin Yang through the whole season?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, if they are using it as just a catalyst to fuel Ehrlich's anger and his path, I do think we might see him here and there just to egg that on, because I think that even from a plot perspective, that could be a useful way to kind of use him from a writer's perspective. But I hope we get more Jin Yang, because...
But it's a clear exit, though.
Yeah.
If Jin Yang was never going to appear again, that was the episode to do it. Right there. I mean, they just laid it out there.
There was a point early on where I felt like we weren't going to see Big Head ever again. So, you know, you never know.
You never know.
And even if we don't see him again this season, I'm sure we would see him next season.
Well, and we haven't talked about this yet, but Jin Yang's buyout is only going to benefit Ed Chen, which in turn will only hurt Monica. And because Monica's a main character, I have a feeling all of that will tie in.
Yeah, he's now a partner now, too.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like we will see more Ed Chen and we will see more Jin Yang. And we were talking about this yesterday. They're an interesting pairing because one is a very predictable take on like the Asian stereotype, and one is a very unpredictable take, like the Asian bro. So I kind of like them as a partnership, and I'd love to see them play off each other a little bit.
Well, even just to go off what he was saying about the Asian stereotype, one of the reasons why I really liked Jin Yang this episode, because I felt like a lot of his comedy was not coming from that. Mm-hmm. It was coming just from, like, great writing and the lines and, like, the delivery, which, of course, his, like, obviously over-exaggerated accent comes into play with how funny it sounds, but even just the concepts and, like, the whole dick pic thing, like, that could be anybody, and that would just be hilarious.
Well, and they've just evolved his character a little bit. It used to be he barely said a word, and it was funny because of that, and he didn't understand anything.
Right.
And then when he brings the car and makes the jokes, it's like, that's a big change, right?
I have it here. He says, now the money is gone, dick is up. Yeah. And then he puts the sunglasses on.
Where did you get those sunglasses?
Oh, from your mom.
Which was amazing.
So, like, I was, like, applauding. Yeah. It was so good. It felt good.
But it's weird because we have talked the last couple weeks about how, as funny as the show is, there'll always be those moments that sort of, they're a little bit more poignant than you expect. Mm-hmm. And the idea that Jin Yang saw his reflection in the yellow Corvette, I was like, oh, yeah, I looked like an asshole.
Right.
So, and then, of course, that once again, you know, bests Bachman, who we see, I think that's the last shot of the episode, is clearly looking
like an asshole. But also another good callback is he goes,
wear the fedora.
Yes. And he goes, it's American American culture, you know, just don't
now,
understand.
Here's the funny question. Do you think there's somebody out there right now with a yellow Corvette that watched that episode and was like, oh, crap.
Wearing a fedora.
As long
also.
As they have a fedora, maybe they can just throw the fedora out.
No, but. You cannot. No. Nobody in a yellow Corvette can pull that off. There is no version of pulling off a yellow Corvette.
Except for maybe Jen Yang, who I thought looked maybe. Kind of awesome.
He is definitely
I just think, but if you buy a yellow Corvette, you wouldn't get the subtleties of it. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, that, to me, covers most of the seafood subplot. I think we're going to explore that more, especially now that Raviga is tied into it. But I hope we do.
No, they're out. Raviga's out of seafood. They're gone. It's an acquisition,
I mean,
$4 million.
Sorry, but becoming gone. The Periscope, I think now that Jin Yang's technology is tied into Periscope with Raviga associated.
No!
But Ed Chen isn't...
Ed Chen is definitely somebody we're going to keep seeing
and how it
interacts with...
This is what I mean. Like, there's a chance Jin Yang starts to just drifts away because it was an acquisition to Periscope, which means Raviga has nothing to do with it anymore. They sold out because she even said in our strategy towards acquisitions,
it was
a complete buyout.
Oh, okay.
But Dinesh might be working there for...
Well, that was the way that whole storyline ended up, which of course was Guilfoyle sitting next to him.
Yeah. Like,
so what do you do all day? And then, you know, Dinesh tries
another
to...
Thing.
Yeah.
That one might actually be a hot dog.
which was great.
Such a good button.
That was great.
Yeah.
So that's why I was worried about the Jin Yang, because they tied up all the loose ends if they needed to.
I guess that's true. Well, we'll see. I hope to see more of him.
I do too.
I feel like at the end of the season, he's going to be everyone's boss.
Yeah,
so, you know,
that could be fun.
They'll negotiate that somehow.
Well, of course, the other kind of acquisition that happens in this episode is a big one, and that's Richard and Gavin partnering. This is the first scene we see of the episode, Richard approaching Gavin's house at 3 a.m. We go inside, and of course, Gavin's house has been completely destroyed due to a rage.
He's just working through some things.
Have you guys ever destroyed furniture owing to professional frustration?
Romantic, sure. Professional, probably not.
I don't think I have either. I'm trying to...
I'm going
to
say no, but the answer is yes.
Yeah.
I like that answer.
Yeah, I have to.
Well, whether or not it's maybe like, you know, punching a hole in your closet door is one thing, but Gavin's house is completely destroyed. This was, even just from a set design standpoint, I loved this. The show does not hold back. Like, that was probably an expensive production design choice to make, but very effective, and a very effective way to bring us into the episode. This is an interesting twist that I really appreciated. Gavin was, like, kind of hurt by Richard's candor.
So emotional.
Did you guys see this coming at all?
No, I didn't see it coming, but I thought that this was fascinating to see Gavin so vulnerable. And then as he went on, you're like, yeah, Richard, you're definitely being a dick right now. This guy is hurting, and you're like, oh, just let me just try and outsmart you and just sign this little piece of paper.
Right.
And I thought that was very funny. He's like, he calls him mean, and then he goes on to call him a sadist. And, of course, he sets his couch on fire. I felt for Gavin in that moment, which I didn't think was something this show could ever accomplish, but well done in that respect.
Yeah. That might partly owe to Matt Ross's performance. I think he's very, very good.
Yeah.
And we were talking last week, just so talented. He wrote and directed Hunt for the Wilder People, which I don't know if any of you guys saw that movie. Viggo Mortensen was Oscar nominated for that movie this year. The guy who plays Gavin Belson wrote and directed that movie, so I don't know what he can't do, but great movie, by the way.
I have to check that out.
So... with this development, of course, there's more fracturing within the initial Pied Piper team. So all of the members of the incubator have to choose whether or not they kind of want to, you know, join Richard or do their own thing. What did you guys think of sort of this exploration of plot?
This felt like one of those sort of like throwaway plot moments because everybody knows how that's going to kind of go.
Right.
But the one part of the scene that I found almost the most fascinating is... when Richard started writing out the formula on the picture and Gavin starts asking questions, as a viewer, did you not feel like you understood what they were explaining?
Oh, because,
like you knew, like, oh, connecting the phones and they have more power now and the score he got at the TechCrunch. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like being on the Starship Enterprise where they're like, it's all warp drive and made up stuff. Mm-hmm. Yet, as a viewer, you kind of understood, like, the concept around his sort of neural pathway that he's going to create around these phones. And I found that to be like amazing, where it's like it's all gibberish, but they've done such a good job of layering it that it's like I kind of knew where this business was going and I understood why their concepts work. And so I think that helped to make everybody connect to the why you would be with Belson and make it okay so that he could bring the other guys with him, because otherwise they're just like, selling out for the money, or why would they go do it otherwise? They had to make it feel like this was a real breakthrough in technology.
Well, I think they've also done a really good job of showing how passionate Richard is about the project, just in general, of him creating the new internet and how much he really feels like it's going to change the world and change things, and how that is the proper, you know, use for his algorithm that he's created. So that, with the combination of the fact that it could actually happen now, definitely gives them some motivation to get beyond the "we hate Gavin Belson" thing.
Right.
It's an excellent point. And whenever you set a show in a very specific world, you want to cater to those people. Like, my roommate's a cloud computing engineer who loves the show just because of the insider's look at tech. But for those who aren't, like us, they do a really good job of kind of holding your hand, and you can enjoy the show if you don't know a lot about this kind of world, or you can whether or not you do. But it is interesting because, like, I know what, like, a Weissman score is now, to your point. And, like, that's a really – that's credit to the writers.
Well, and I think some people will know what a Weissman score is and not even know that it's a real thing. They might have thought it was just a TV thing. Mm-hmm. But they still know what it is and what it does.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
It's a really good point you bring up. And it's the show's done an excellent job with that. So I think one of my favorite things during this subplot was, of course, watching Jared handle the news. We got some amazing Jared moments in this. I liked the subtle wave goodbye.
Yeah, I actually took the note of that, because that's, again, another one of those really heartfelt moments, because Jared's just so upset. He's like, just that wave, it's just like, Jared, you're breaking my heart. No.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, but I also liked that we got from Jared, we got a big huzzah at one point. Because,
yeah, we did get a huzzah.
Yeah. But, Brant, to sort of go back to the idea of sitting down with Gavin, you know, as someone who has had the kind of success in business you have, you know, on TV a lot of times it's like, no, I'll never work with that person, I hate them. But you have to work with people you hate all the time. I mean,
oh, my God, all the time.
And, you know, you're just like...
like right now.
Well, yeah, there's that too, obviously.
But, you know, the skill is not learning how to work with someone you hate. The skill is making sure the person you hate doesn't know you hate them.
Right, I think
That's what Hollywood and the business of entertainment is, because the rewards are massive, and so you keep relationships because you don't know where anybody's going to be. So if you don't personally vibe with someone, you don't like the way they do things, they screw you over, you still may be able to use that relationship, and no one's willing to burn that bridge.
Yeah.
And so that is very real in the world of, like, oh, if you have a chance. And there's buyers like that I've gone through where the entire community absolutely despises someone who's working at one of these networks. And we all talk about that as producers, yet we'll all go pitch them shows, and you want to be friends with them, and then you, because you know how much business is at stake there. And so there really is no, I'll never work with that. Now, there are a few people that you go and do that, but you got to, like, calculate the risk of that. And I did that once. I had a network executive that was just such a dick, and it bothered me so much. But it was at a very small network. He was at a point in his career where I couldn't see him getting a bigger job at any point. And I said, you know what? We can finally say all the things and tell him to go fuck himself, basically. And so we talked about it at a company, and we decided to do that. We're just like, yeah, no, we're not working with you anymore. Go away. And so I sort of used that as, like, okay, I'm going to put all my negativity on you, and now I can be ass-kisser all day to everybody else.
I'll get the catharsis out in that one moment.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So Jared has some great moments. I liked when they're looking to hire, is it Brett? I can't remember the name of the old employee.
Yeah, yes. Brant. Brett Saxon.
Yeah, Brett Saxon. Mm-hmm. But Jared, of course, says, no, he's tardy and fresh. Yeah. So you wouldn't want to go with that. But we also see a moment, another great, I just have to shout out these Jared moments. Of course, Richard jokes, Jared, you'd never actually murder anyone, would you?
And his answer is just
laughing.
Just laugh. But the best line was, convince them to commit suicide.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what it takes. Like, that's the greatest thing. Yeah. I'll shoot them. I'll stab them. I'll strangle them. I'll convince them to commit suicide.
He's half crazed, half Apache. Yeah. He'll scalp them. And then,
those pale faced sons of bitches.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Wow.
We also learned he grew up in a group home, another Jared, a group home for boys. And
see, I thought we knew that because it seems so appropriate for his character. I didn't realize we didn't know that until you just said that. Yeah.
Do you guys think we'll see Jared snap? Are we approaching that, or?
Yeah.
Is this just Jared? I think it might just be Jared.
I think he's gonna cross a line at some point.
Yeah.
And everyone's gonna freak out, and Richard's gonna have to be like, talk him off.
Yeah.
Talk him down from the ledge.
I think
if he feels
Richard is threatened by Gavin Belson in some way, then I think we might see freak out.
He already tried to threaten him with the cheese knife.
Yeah.
Already.
That was good.
Gave him the dagger eyes.
Yeah, it was great. So, of course, the only two remaining are Guilfoyle and Dinesh. They have to make their decisions. Guilfoyle and Richard have this kind of interesting dynamic where each kind of wants the other but doesn't want to admit they want the other, and both kind of end up having to beg. And, of course, there's the chortle my balls line. But they do, and then Dinesh does not. Dinesh sticks with the
other. For now.
For now. Yeah, do you guys think Dinesh is going to be looking at dick pics for the next year? Do you think he'll chase?
He'll be over soon and maybe just looking at dick pics for fun on the side.
Right, yeah.
Probably trying to look his way out of that one.
Yeah.
And I think the dick pic thing is going to come back around with Mia, too.
I do, too. That was exactly what I was going to say, was now that Dinesh has maybe this hacker girlfriend.
I don't know. I think it's all going away.
Do you?
Yeah. That's my gut instinct is that they're going to... something's gonna happen where all they need in the scene is Dinesh comes and says, I can't do this anymore, please let me join you.
Yeah,
he does that. That's the end of Jing Yang for the season. That's the end of the dick pic stuff. That all wraps and they move on to something else. That could easily happen. Now, I'm not saying it's gonna happen, and if worst case happen, it does happen, you can be sure it'll be a big huge fun thing for the next season,
for sure.
Because they'll realize, oh man, everybody loved this.
Absolutely.
And by the way, Seinfeld went through this as well with Newman.
Yeah.
Where it was like, holy crap, people love that character. Mm-hmm. And then they had very, very little in that season of him. Then they bring him back and write up whole episodes with him. So
definitely.
I just want more jokes like the not safe for work, but it is for
but
you.
But it is your work. It's brilliant. Guilfoyle is pretty good.
He's
my favorite. Ooh,
my favorite performance.
We drink the same beer. So
yeah.
Oh, well, then
he loves that beer. Always nursing that beer. Well, I feel like for the most part that covers most of the plot in this episode. If there's anything I'm missing, we can talk about it now. But with that, we might as well get into some predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV
predictions. So I'm interested in Mia because we met her last episode and she kind of existed in a satellite way this episode, literally, I guess. So you think the dick pic thing might tie in to Mia dating Dinesh?
Potentially. I do think it will. It's going to have some type of impact based on all the conversation of her being aware of everything that's going on in their house.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been a fan of this plot line since they introduced her,
right.
And especially because I love Guilfoyle, the interaction with her and Guilfoyle.
Yeah.
So just, I know there's got to be more to it, and so the constant pulling back to it and adding notes here and there is I'm excited just to see whatever's going to happen. As far as what's going to happen, I don't know. I think somehow her relationship with Guilfoyle is going to put Dinesh in a bad spot, obviously, but how that plays out, I'm sure I could come up with something, but I'm sure it's going to be completely different than whatever I think it's going to be.
Yeah, I agree. This has been an interesting... What about general predictions? Anything that you guys kind of foresee in the next five episodes? Six episodes. This was episode 4.
Well, I stand by my assessment that Jin Yang is going to have everybody working for him by the end of the season. And I think that Monica will get an office a little bit away from the men's room by the end of the season. And also, I mean, as far as Mia is concerned, you know, it was introduced and we talked about this. We thought it was that sort of thing where, oh, okay, but she really loves Guilfoyle and she's going to leave Dinesh. No, I think she's using him in a completely different way, and it's basically to destroy Guilfoyle, and that's the only reason she's with Dinesh. So
yeah.
I think that's where we'll see that play out. And, you know, I think Guilfoyle will eventually be afraid to leave the house, much like Dinesh was through the course of this episode.
Yeah. I think also in larger terms, too, that we might, in terms of, like, the season, that we're moving towards, like, a next phase, I think, maybe, because I really feel like the company with Gavin Belson is going to be successful, and I think that may actually create an issue as to where it becomes very successful, and then it's like they can't be operating out of that house anymore, and so there might be a change in the status quo in some case by the end of the season. I think that this might be the season for that, where it would be okay, especially with the development of the characters, so that they're not just, you know, these little prop-up pieces, they're actually characters. I think that we can have them in a different space and still have a good dynamic and still have a great show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think if you go back to sort of like, if you look, okay, these guys wrote this before the season started. It's already in the can. Where would they be going? Gavin Belson was clearly a play for them. So he's going to be a key character. My guess, if I was writing this, I would have Richard and Gavin have a very close relationship, where Richard's the only one defending him and the one who's protecting him and everybody else is against him, and that will be probably one of their core conflict areas through the rest of the season and that piece of it. And then Mia, of course, will be coming in a big way because they've set that up from the beginning, and they've been playing towards that. And again, if you're writing that in the writer's room before this ever airs, that's probably a season-long run mm-hmm. that you're getting to make a, you know, sweep through. So I could expect both those are going to come into play in a big way.
That's a really good point. Mia may even come into, like, endangering the company at some point.
That's kind of what I foresee, is that she might try to use that to leverage some kind of, like, ransom. I mean, that's not quite the right word, but, you know, like, using this sensitive material to leverage something.
Or getting Dinesh to leave.
Right.
Altogether.
Yeah. And, as some, you know, there's activist a, there's, there's a lot. Something, because they're going to be a big,
major company.
Well,
they need a foil, right? They need a foil. You can't use Gavin as a foil again, because he's a pretty shallow character in the sense that he's such a goofball and so, you know, stereotypical in that corporate-y way, so you can't play that same card again. Yeah. So you got to come up with another way of doing that, and you need a foil, and she'll probably end up being that. They've sort of had everybody be the foil, the venture capitalist guys or whatever, so they need a new one. This could be a good one.
Well, we also have Action Jack Barker, and that's what I'm really excited to see is, you know, with Gavin's departure, I don't know if it was made official, but I'm assuming Jack Barker might have taken his position at Hooli. Did we ever learn that, or...?
I think so. Okay. Yeah. I think it was just implied.
Yeah.
With the way that he expressed, like,
right,
the story
way that he kind of saw him out,
led him into.
So I'm really excited for Jack Barker to kind of take the shoes that Gavin was wearing and to see them butt heads. I don't know what I'm interested in that reaction.
I don't think you're going to see much of Jack Barker either.
You don't. You don't think Hooli's going to be?
I'm actually on that bus.
I think
Hooli
will
see...
be. Hooli's going to take a back seat for a long time.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're going to hear about Hooli on the news.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing
they'll
is
they'll talk about Hooli like they did in this episode.
It's an expensive set for.
Yeah,
little
I think it's a long play where I think you guys are right that it won't happen this year. But I think that's a much bigger storyline.
Well, and they just
towards.
They will adjust how this all plays out depending on the feedback. Basically, this show will dictate what next season looks like.
Well, we do ultimately know that if Gavin and Richard's venture is successful, it could completely dismantle Hooli, because if Hooli's a server-based tech service and this new, like, the new development with Richard and Gavin is, could potentially dethrone all of that. So I'm interested to see how all that'll play out. I'm interested to just see, I feel like I've wanted to see more with, I feel like they're using Monica a lot and that hasn't really paid off yet. So I hope we see more with that at Reviga. And I'd say this every episode, but Lori Bream is one of my favorite characters.
Well,
on the show,
and that's going to be their, that's really fascinating, because Lori's like someone you desperately need. Mm-hmm. She's hard to work into episodes because unless she's intimately connected to the guys, which basically they have come at every version of how to get them connected to each other.
Yeah.
So I can't see any organic way that they're involved.
Right.
And Monica, as a go-between, is even less relevant. So, but you need those characters. So they will find a way to tie them all together.
Agreed.
It will probably be a really thin, you know, sort of bullshit way. But nobody's going to care because I just like them so much. So.
Absolutely, which is
and that's okay.
That's kind of the show.
The show, basically the couple episodes there. We're already like that. That's fine. Yeah.
Well, and judging from the scenes from next week, it's going to be at least part of it will involve Lori in terms of, you know, the possible the threat of a coup there in the office, or at least that's what Bachman's told. So I think we'll see a lot of her next week.
Absolutely. Well, I guess with that, guys, that finishes our coverage of season 4, episode 4 of Silicon Valley. Thanks so much for joining today. Again, this is AfterBuzz TV. If you guys are listening to the podcast, thanks so much. Go ahead and hop on iTunes and give us a rating if you'd like. If you're watching, you can always comment. We get back to those, and we love seeing what you guys have to say. In the meantime, my name is Jeff Graham. If you guys want to find me on Twitter, you can do so at Jeffrey C. Graham, and I'd love for the rest of the panel to see us out. Brent.
Well, I'm Brent Pinvidic at Brent Pinvidic, and you can catch up my new podcast at whyimnot.com/iTunes.
And again, guys, it's Nate Miller. You can find me at DogLikeNate on iTunes. Wow, on iTunes. You got me all tongue-twisted.
Yeah.
on so Twitter and Instagram. I'm so excited. Now I have to listen to your podcast. And I also host...
Better Call Saul.
Yes. Which I'll be doing later tonight.
I'm Christian Blatt. You can find me at ChristianDMZ. And you might even occasionally see or hear me on the Why I'm Not podcast at whyimnot.com.
Yes.
Awesome, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next Monday at 4 p.m. And until then, have a great week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.